1, 2, 1, 2, 2.
The Arkansas Studies Institute building is a real treasure in downtown Little Rock.
Down here at ASI, we try to kind of blend the art side of Arkansas and also the history side.
If you were to walk into your local bar on a Saturday night and see Johnny Cash, Elvis, Carl Perkins, and Jerry Lee Lewis, I mean, that's like somebody made that up, right? But that happened, and that's musical history and Arkansas history.
I think of Johnny as having musical integrity. Everything that Johnny did was around him as he was growing up.
For the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, I'm J. Bradley Menick, and welcome to Arts and Letters, a program providing opportunities for the celebration of the arts and humanities at UALR. Today we'll be taking an exclusive tour of the Johnny Cash Arkansas Icon Exhibit, one of the installations at the beautiful Arkansas Studies Institute. This installation, which opens on October 10th and runs through January 24th, imagines the historical legacy of Johnny Cash through artifacts and live performances. On Arts and Letters, we'll talk with Associate Provost Deborah Baldwin, who oversees the Center for Arkansas History and Culture. We'll hear from the Chair of the Art Department, Tom Clifton, and UALR student Nick Cisneski, who designed the exhibit. We'll talk with ASI archivist Dr. Cullen Woodward, who will be our tour guide. We'll hear from Tom Richardson of Music. And later in the show, Dr. Kristen Mann and UALR student Stan James, who have created educational opportunities for Arkansas students with respect to the exhibit. We're standing in downtown Little Rock, right outside the Arkansas Studies Institute, composed of three restored historical buildings from three centuries. A building framed by three sides of metal, rectangle, and accented by glass. One walks through the doors and inside finds beautifully restored wooden floors, artifacts from the Poorbeck and Bowman building and the Geyer and Adams building. We take an elevator to the second floor, move in through a series of doors, and find ourselves with Dr. Deborah Baldwin, Associate Provost at UALR, who oversees the Center for Arkansas History and Culture. Deborah Baldwin, welcome.
Thank you.
You are also a professor of history. Would you tell us about the history of the Arkansas Studies Institute?
The Arkansas Studies Institute building is a real treasure in downtown Little Rock, and it is an example, and in fact a unique example, of a Central Arkansas library and UALR working together. That doesn't happen in most cities. The Arkansas Studies Institute is actually a building. The building houses the historic archives of the Central Arkansas Library System, or the Butler Center, and the archives of UALR in the UALR Center for Arkansas History and Culture.
Would you describe some of the exhibit rooms?
The first floor of the Arkansas Studies Institute building has galleries on the west end of the building. They're in an underground gallery, we call it, but it's actually accessible and can be viewed from the street floor. Then on the street floor, or the first floor, are galleries primarily featuring Arkansas artists. And on the west end of that building is Concordia Hall, which has gallery space but also reception space for a variety of groups to use. It's a very multi-function, multi-use kind of building. It's light, it's airy, it's won a number of design awards. So we're fortunate, I think, in this partnership with the Central Arkansas Library System to be there.
The Johnny Cash Arkansas Icon Exhibit is in the basement gallery.
It's called the Underground Gallery. It actually is open into the first floor. So you can see it from the galleries as you walk in from the street. You just look down into it. It's kind of a nice feature because as you look down into that gallery facing west, you'll see the display that the art student did. It's colorful, it's vibrant, it will catch your eye. As you go down the stairs into that gallery, you're facing north, and on then the east side is the historic information, the narrative, and the historic photographs.
We wind down a series of steps and find ourselves in the atrium gallery, a long rectangular room.
At the bottom of the stairs, we meet up with Dr. Cullen Woodward, ASI archivist and our tour guide.
Here in the atrium gallery, we have an exhibit. It's a nice space. There's a lot of history in this space, but there's also a lot of space for art.
Dr. Woodward, archivist, writer, tour guide, welcome.
Thank you.
Would you tell us a little bit about the impetus for the exhibit? Where did the idea come from?
When I first got to UALR, I thought it might be interesting to see what we have in our collections on Johnny Cash. So I just did a keyword search in the catalog, and I got a couple of hits in the Winthrop Rockefeller collection. So the exhibit sort of grew out of what I was finding in the Rockefeller collection. You know, the audio was there. I knew what was on it, but hadn't been digitized, so there's sort of an archival challenge to doing that and making it more available, but also just promoting the Cummins concert, because everyone knew about Folsom, they knew about San Quentin, but I thought this was interesting because it was the only concert he played for prisoners in Arkansas, and started to learn about the problems that Arkansas had in terms of the penitentiary prison reform. Rockefeller was a big reformer, and Cash liked his ideas about prison reform. That's why he initially played for him. So the exhibit really came out of that, the Rockefeller years. And as I did more research and learned more about some of the things that Cash did in Arkansas, it really snowballed. And I decided that if we're going to do an exhibit, we maybe wanted to highlight lesser known things that he did in Arkansas. I mean, not just Cummins, not just the Rockefeller concerts, but some other visits, and maybe look into his upbringing and Dias and Kingsland. I figured if we were going to do an exhibit on Cash, we would kind of have to do the whole man and not just one part of it and one part of his history in Arkansas.
How did you do the research?
The research was a combination of things. It was really an interdisciplinary project. I mean, I started with the music, listening to the music. And, you know, it is Cash doing his classic songs, but there's also, on those tapes, Rockefeller speaking.
I said we would clean up the deplorable conditions in our prisons, and we did.
And looking at newspaper articles, you know, the Gazette and the Democrat, for more background information. But I wanted the exhibit to be as visual as possible, so the photographs were really important. I started to get a little obsessed with the photographs and trying to track down any that probably people hadn't seen before. And in Arkansas, that's not too much of a problem because a lot of these things that he did are very well publicized. I mean, they may be worth the time, but I realized I'd have to go to Kingsland to get some photos there. I wanted to go up to Dias to actually take pictures of the house. I mean, there are some older photos that are out there, but I wanted to sort of see the house in different stages. I mean, it's been restored now, but I went up there when it was still winter, and seeing the house in winter was kind of interesting because almost every picture you see the Cash house is summer and it's hot. But the photographs really became the focal point of my research after a while. When Tom Clifton started to work on the exhibit design, I mean, it became obvious that, you know, there can't be 50 photographs put onto this exhibit. I mean, there's sort of a layout. You want to make room for the text. So Tom and his student assistant, Nick, had more of a sort of artistic view of how it should be designed. We had to balance between, you know, what are the best photos that we have, and, you know, maybe some of them we'll put on the online exhibit that we couldn't fit in. So it's really just about whittling it down to a reasonable amount.
Tom Clifton, chair of the art department, and UALR BFA student Nick Cisneski have been designing the Johnny Cash Arkansas Icon exhibit. Tom and Nick, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for having us.
Tom, would you tell us a little bit about how you got involved in the Johnny Cash Arkansas Icon exhibit?
I got contacted by Deborah Baldwin.
probably about a year ago, and it was, she just kind of put a bug in my ear, but you know, wanted to talk about it, and then it developed out of that.
How did you design the exhibit?
Nick, how many models have you made?
4, I believe. It started out as just kind of like a fun little mock-up, and then it got a little bit more complex, and then it started to be, you know, the actual scale in relation to all the panels and the, you know, people and whatnot and how it's actually going to look.
So, Tom, what are some of the interesting parts as one would move through this?
Well, the way that it's laid out chronologically so that people can follow through it, basically going left to right. And on the east wall, and that's where the primary narrative is with the photographs. And on the other wall, there's the design that Nick put together that has, it's reminiscent of his home interior. So it's got the pine wood look, and then it's got design on top of that, photographs, and then elements of his lyrics.
Now I taught to weeping willow how to cry, and I showed the clouds how to cover up a clear blue sky, and the tears I cried for that woman are gonna flood you, big river, and I'm gonna sit right here until I die. I met her accidentally in Slayton.
So it's kind of a typographic treatment of a wall.
What are some of the key design elements one would want to take notice?
The use of texture, unity, and variety throughout the exhibition. The west wall has a large amount of texture from the wood grain, as Tom mentioned, which symbolize his roots in Dyess, Arkansas.
How high is the water, Mama? 2 feet high and rising. How high is the water, Papa? She said it's 2 feet high and rising. We can make it to the road in a homemade boat. That's the only thing we got left that'll float. It's already over all of wheat and oats. 2 feet high and rising.
And the east wall has more of a grid system layout, which gives the viewer ease when moving through to easily read and have the narrative of a story.
Let's open the doors of the Atrium Gallery and listen as Colin Woodward takes us on a guided tour.
What we've done is we've gathered some images of Cash, and we tell the story of Cash's life and career in 5 panels that are broken up into a decade or two each for the major periods in his life and career. The first panel that I want to talk about, which is called Surviving the Depression in Arkansas. This tells the story of Cash's upbringing in the 1930s during the Great Depression. Cash was born in 1932 in Kingsland in Cleveland County. And the Cash family were cotton farmers, and like a lot of families during the Depression, they were hit very hard by the economy. And in 1934, Cash's father discovered that there was a New Deal program. The federal government was building houses and giving land to farmers up in Dyess. It was called the Dyess Colony. So in 1935, the Cash family moved up to Dyess in Mississippi County. And the image that we have here in part one of the exhibit shows the really horrible flood in 1937. The flood was worse for Arkansas than the more famous flood in 1927. And if you look at this photo, it shows a house that looks like it was dropped into a sea of water.
I was telling you, I was raised in the cotton country in northeast Arkansas. And one night in 1937, the Mississippi River broke the levee at Memphis. And the next morning, I heard my mama hollering out to my daddy, "How high is that water this morning on the front porch?" He said, "It's 2 feet high and it's still rising."
You can see that the water's about up to the roof of the house. You can see some sticks, they look like sticks sticking out of the water, but those are trees. So the flood water was really high in a lot of places, including Dyess. And so the Cash family had to evacuate, and Cash would later write a song about it called 5 Feet High and Rising.
How high's the water, Mama? It's 3 feet high and rising.
How high's the water, Papa? He said it's 3 feet high and rising. Well, the hives are gone and I've lost my bees. The chickens are sleeping up in the trees. The cow's in the water up past her knees. It's 3 feet high and rising.
We're pleased to have with us Tom Richardson, professor of music and musical history at UALR. Welcome.
Thanks.
What do you notice about that song?
Well, there's the picking patterns in the guitar, which is common to the Tennessee 3, the rhythm section that Johnny used forever. And it's kind of the style that Johnny also used, the muting and picking on the strings. It is train-like. There's a rhythmic pattern that keeps going that's infectious, gives the illusion of perpetual momentum. It just keeps coming, which I think is a good simile for the flood, because it just keeps coming also.
I'm J. Bradley Minnick, and you're listening to Arts and Letters, the Johnny Cash Arkansas Icon Exhibit on KUAR 89.1.
I got cotton in the bottom land. It's up and growing, and I got a good stand.
Cotton was a way of life in Arkansas, well into the 20th century. In Cash's Mississippi County, one could find the Lee Wilson Company, which made a fortune in cotton. Dyess kept the Cashes away from sharecropping, but did not free them from the cotton fields.
Cash wrote, "By the time I was 8, I was dragging a cotton sack."
Musically, he described his experiences in his 1958 song, Pickin' Time.
Get 'em fat, come pickin' time. The corn is yellow and the beans are high. The sun is hot.
There's a part in one of Cash's autobiographies. He describes a sharecropping family in Dyess and just how destitute they are. And even though the Cashes certainly weren't rich, they weren't sharecroppers. And, you know, cotton was hard work. It was, you know, working in the fields in the summer to get it ready, and then in the fall you had the harvest. And the 37 flood was scary because they thought they were just going to lose everything. Ironically, the flood replenished the land, and Cash said that the 38 crop was great because the fields were better than they had ever been. Cashes are small farmers who are, you know, just trying to make a living. You know, the Lee Wilson Company was a town unto itself. So they were very lucky, but they had to find a way to survive.
Cash wrote in his 1997 autobiography, "I ended up in the military, the same way most other Southern boys did for lack of a better way out of the cotton fields."
Ray Cash, Johnny Cash's father, he was a hardworking guy, and, you know, he had the hands to help him work this land. So it wasn't easy, but it was really the Dyess colony that got the Cashes through the Depression. Hard work and a little help from the government, I think, is how they got through.
And music.
And music, yes. Music was central to Cash's upbringing. His mother was a musician. She played piano, a little bit of guitar. So Cash learned music from her. He was listening to the radio all the time, but you hear these stories about just Cash staying up late. I think the movie Walk the Line was accurate with that. I mean, he's in bed and he wants to listen to the radio all night. And, you know, they didn't have rock and roll, but they had gospel and they had country. And so all these guys that he's listening to, you know, Jimmy Rogers and people like that, they're going to influence his music in a big way by the 1950s. But, you know, if you've been to the house, again, you get a sense of the isolation and kind of the desolation around there. So, you know, the radio was big entertainment. I mean, other than going to the movies, that's what you did.
Up above my head.
Up above my head.
I hear music in the air.
I hear music in the air.
I
one of Cash's heroes was Sister Rosetta Tharpe, who could really rock and roll. She played guitar, she was plugged in, and that was sort of one of the beginnings of rock and roll is after World War II. So Cash is drawing on all these different types of music and these different influences. And being close to Memphis, I mean, later Nashville obviously becomes really important, but I think it is a lot of what he's hearing out of Memphis, and stuff coming from the Delta has a major influence on him. So, Cash, in different parts of his life, he's sort of the folk guy, then he's the country guy, then he's the rock and roll guy. And this really goes back to what he's hearing in Dias.
In particular, Cash's boom chicka boom sound reminds one of the trains that pass by his house.
Yeah, I mean, his original sound does kind of almost sound like a moving train. And it's amazing the sound he could get out of just three people. I mean, it was him on guitar, acoustic guitar. He had an electric guitarist, Luther Perkins, and then he had a bassist. There's no drummer there initially. But Cash did something with his guitar. I play guitar, but I don't even know how to replicate this. He would put a dollar bill along the strings, and he'd strum it in a way where it kind of have this sound like a snare drum. So it was kind of like he's playing rhythm guitar with a percussive sound to it.
Through his music, Cash explored themes, many of which came from this unique geographic place, the combined elements of the Bible Belt, the Wild West, Ozark folk culture, and the Mississippi Delta. Native Americans, cowboys and criminals, all colorful elements of Arkansas culture. Let's continue our tour.
The second panel in our exhibit is called Leaving Arkansas in the 1950s. And the first image we have on the panel is of Cash from his high school yearbook. It was taken in 1950. Cash is looking very young. He's got a coat and a tie on. His hair is combed very neatly. But he's got that serious look that Johnny Cash is known for. So even though he's not the man in black yet for a while, he's kind of got that serious look in his eye, a very determined young man. But this is his high school photograph. After Cash graduated, he joined the military. He was stationed in Germany and was a code breaker, keeping tabs on the Soviet Union. It was the height of the Cold War, and the Korean War was going on. Cash, luckily for him, didn't have to fight over in Korea, but he did serve in the military. And after Cash got out of the Air Force, he moved to Memphis, and that's where he got his start as a musician. And by that time, he was married to his first wife, Vivian Liberto. And this second image we have in this panel is still a very young-looking Cash playing with the Tennessee Two. The Tennessee Two being his bass player, Marshall Grant, and his guitarist, Luther Perkins. And Cash is strumming his guitar as he did, and he's singing. I think there's this tendency in the music of the time to romanticize train travel. You go on Amtrak now on a long distance trip, it's like purgatory. I mean, you feel like you're never gonna get off the train.
But that train keeps rolling on down to San Antonio.
But if you're coming out of the 30s and 40s, it's quick travel. It's fast, it's getting you to faraway places. And so, the first major song he has, Folsom Prison Blues, the train is mentioned. The train going by the prison, and the train is a symbol of freedom for a guy who's in there.
Always be a good boy, don't ever play with guns, but I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. When I hear that whistle blowing, I hang my head and cry.
Let's hear again from Tom Richeson.
The poet part of him, the storyteller, and I really think of him as an oral poet, is telling a story. So in Folsom Prism, there's a story that continues all the way through the song, and it draws the listener into the story, just like a good non-musical storyteller.
In the 60s, Cash was busy making albums, touring, and acting in the movies. He continued to produce hit songs such as Ring of Fire in 1963 and made some of his best albums such as Bitter Tears about Native Americans.
This was another one of those obsessions that Cash had in the 60s. We've talked about trains, but the Native American issue really became a cause for him. It wasn't just he wanted to write songs about Native Americans or the Wild West. He didn't think that Native Americans were treated very well, and Bitter Tears is really his major statement to that effect. And the entire album, it's a concept album. I mean, before Sgt. Pepper and some of the big albums of the late 60s, like Tommy and everything, Cash is doing concept albums.
In 1968, Cash visited Dias for his homecoming show after the success of his landmark album at Folsom Prison. According to Mike Trimble of the Arkansas Gazette, every acne-plagued rural teenager in America would like to imagine himself a man like Cash. Let's return to our tour.
And 1968 is really one of Cash's biggest years. And the first photo in the panel shows Cash outside his house in Dias. Now, at this point, in late 1968, the Cash home had been abandoned. It was very dilapidated. And the photos that were taken at the time really kind of show a stark, desolate landscape. And we have Cash kneeling in front of his house. His house is a ways behind him in the picture. And even though these look like kind of stark photos, for Cash it was a homecoming for him. He had cut his huge Folsom live album earlier in the year. It sold really well. He had performed in Arkansas at campaign rallies in 1968.
You are a wonderful audience. We're still trying to estimate the size of this crowd. For over an hour, people have not been permitted to stop and park. So no telling what the crowd would have risen to had we been able to accommodate everybody. But we do appreciate your being here, and I'm going to ask Johnny Cash to come back out and give you his encore.
By the end of the year, he's sort of reassessing everything, and coming back to Arkansas was kind of a way to regroup after this big year of 1968. So he went up to Dias with a photographer, took this photo. June was with him. They picked some cotton. They took pictures inside the house, outside the house. So it was really kind of a special occasion for Cash.
Well, I left here when I was 18 and 19. We moved in this house in the winter of 1935. There were five cans of paint sitting there on the floor. It was all there was here, remember? And every one of us sat down in the middle of the floor and cried.
Now, the second image is of Cash playing at Cummins Prison Farm in 1969.
When I get out of Cummins, I'm going up to Little Rock. I'm gonna walk right up those Capitol steps and I ain't gonna even knock.
In 1969, Cash and Rockefeller rode around the Cummins prison grounds on a Dobie wagon, which was pulled by a mule. The wagon was used to haul water and food around the prison grounds.
And Cash had a long history of doing prison songs. He played at a lot of prisons, especially Folsom and San Quentin. But he only played once for Arkansas prisoners, and that was this concert here at Cummins Prison Farm. And the image, as you can see, is taken from the viewpoint of the prisoners. You can see the backs of the heads of the guys in front. You see Cash on stage. There's a camera that was recording it. Now in the crowd were white prisoners and black prisoners, and they were more or less kind of mixed together that day in the crowd, but the prison was still actually segregated in terms of where the guys lived in the barracks. So Jim Crow laws were still in effect until 1970, and if you know his band, it's quite a bit different from the earlier years. By this point, Luther Perkins had died,
Cash had Carl Perkins with him on stage playing guitar. He had a new guitarist from Arkansas named Bob Wooten that was playing with him. He has a drummer at this point. So you can see in just the course of a couple panels how the Cash band changes and how his image changes. He's wearing that more classic outfit that we associate with him. So he's kind of become this bigger than life figure.
Let's bring it all back. What do you say? The Carter family and the Statler brothers. Mother Maybelle, Helen, June, Anita, and the Statler brothers.
Arkansas was still reeling from prison scandals that gained a lot of attention. Would you talk about his need to kind of rectify the problems that were happening in the prisons?
Sure. At least in Arkansas, the prison system was truly horrifying. And I don't know how much Cash really knew about it, but I think growing up in Arkansas, he probably had a pretty good idea of what happened if you got sent down to Cummins. And Cash had always this affinity towards prison songs. And again, you see that way back at the beginning with Folsom Prison Blues. And as you know, his career went on, he would play at various prisons. He played in California, he'd play in Texas, he played in Tennessee, Louisiana, everywhere. And he eventually stopped doing them, I think around 1980. But in the late 60s, the prison album that he cuts at Folsom is his comeback.
You know, we were at, when we did the show at Folsom Prison, we heard a song for the first time that we recorded on the album. The song was written by one of the inmates there in the prison, and he didn't
There was
know
this myth about Cash that he had that served hard time, and wasn't true, but he had that persona, that authenticity, where people could believe that he had been in jail a long time or been in prison, and there were so many prison songs that he did, it was really, you know, reinforcing that image.
And I think probably when he comes up for parole that it might mean that he might get out a little bit earlier because of the fact that he has got something going for him on the outside. But although he is in for life, he said, I don't know what he did. It must have been wrong. He reckoned it was wrong or not. But we're going to do that song.
By the mid-1970s, there seemed to have emerged a new Johnny Cash. Although Cash had only one hit song in the 70s, he remained a big draw in his home state. Let's return to the tour.
Now, if we move along to the fourth panel, which is called Turning Inward, the 1970s and 1980s. Again, this is a transitional decade for Cash, the 1970s. At this point, the country is kind of winding down from the Vietnam War, even though it's still going on until 1975. A lot of people are turning inward. This 1970s has been called the Me Decade. Cash really got swept up into the religious revival that was sweeping the country. He became more of a family man, but he always finds time for Arkansas, no matter what decade he's in. And this first image we see is a poster for Cash playing at the Arkansas State Fair in 1971. And again, you can see how things change. It's a picture of Cash with June right next to him. And for a lot of years, they had sort of a secretive relationship, but at this point, they're married, and everyone associates John with June and June with John, so they're really kind of this power duo in country music. And some of the other acts that are advertised in this are the Carter family, of course. They would play with Cash a lot when he was on tour. And also the Statler brothers, who were with Cash for years. They were there at Cummins Prison, and they're still with them here in the 1970s. So in the 1970s, Cash he's focusing more on his family and on his new son. He even cuts a children's album at one point in the 70s. And the problem is Cash isn't selling a lot of records the way he used to. He has one hit record in the 70s, one piece at a time. But he's still a big draw live. And in 1976, the bicentennial year, Cash plays again in Arkansas. And the second image is of Cash playing at the Risen football field in Cleveland County.
Cash rode through the streets of Risen with his father Ray and his wife June Carter. At the Risen football field, he appeared on stage with June, his young son John Carter,
and Governor David Pryor. A marker was also dedicated to him in Kingsland, and it's still there. I'm J. Bradley Minnick, and you're listening to Arts and Letters, the Johnny Cash Arkansas Icon Exhibit, on KUAR 89.1.
And we can see Cash on stage with his guitar. We can see over the shoulder of Marshall Grant, the bassist. You can see it's a big crowd. The weather wasn't great that day, but the rain held off. And you can see that Cash is in his classic black getup. It's black shirt, black pants. But for the bicentennial, he had two eagles on the front of his shirt. You can't really see it in that picture, but this was sort of a symbolic gesture for the bicentennial. Cash acts as kind of a unofficial ambassador for the bicentennial. So in the 70s, Cash, he's not just the family man, he's also the symbol of American patriotism. And so for the year, he wears the same suit with the eagles on it. And this is a big day for Risen. I mean, it's not a big town, there were more people at this concert than live in the entire town. But this was Cash's home. He was born in Cleveland County, and so for everyone to see him in 1976 was a big deal. And politicians turned out, Cash's family is there, his father, of course his son and June. So Cash isn't just doing it for the fans, he's also doing it for his family.
At a low point in his career, he kept his sense of humor. In 1983, in August, the Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Little Rock held a roast of Cash, who was ribbed for not only singing, but also talking off key.
You know, if you've ever seen one of these roasts, it's interesting because they're just making fun of the person for an hour or so. And some of them can be really mean. They weren't all that mean to Cash, but they made some jokes about his weight, how he had gained quite a bit of weight since his Folsom prison days.
Johnny, we all know that a man of your stature has many commitments, hundreds of requests annually. So it is with a deep feeling of appreciation from the Big Brothers and all of us here tonight that you would honor us with your presence. It really means a lot. Ladies and gentlemen, here's a man who has proved you can come home. So let's welcome him home, Mr. Johnny Cash.
Cash was not the kind of guy to do speeches, so what he said was pretty brief.
Thank you very much. Hello, I'm Johnny Cash. I just had to say, my mother should always say that, you know, in case there's any doubt. Don't get blamed for, you get blamed for enough stuff, don't get blamed for something you didn't do, be sure they know who you are.
But one thing that one of his roasters said that I really liked was he said of Cash, he said, he was a guy who had been down as many times as he's been up, a man who carries his heart in his music. Here in Arkansas, he said, you speak our language.
Like a bird on a wire, like a drunk in a midnight choir.
In late March 1994, a few weeks before the release of his landmark album, American Recordings, Cash visited his birthplace to touch his roots again. He dedicated a new post office in Kingsland, which featured a new Cash cancellation stamp. Let's return to Cullen and conclude our tour.
I have saved all my ribbons for thee.
And our last panel here, moving on down, is about Cash's revival, so to speak. It's called Come Back, the 1990s and 2000s. And in the 1990s, Cash really finds a new generation of fans. And a lot of this had to do with Rick Rubin, who was a Los Angeles record producer. He'd worked with the Beastie Boys. He had gotten Def Jam records started. And Rubin liked Cash, and he thought the way to go with him was to record him like he sounded when he first got started. So rather than layer his records with all kind of musicians and sounds and effects, Rubin just has Cash pretty much sit in a room with his acoustic guitar and play the songs that Cash knew and Cash loved. And this really introduces Cash's music to a new generation of fans. In the mid-90s, as Cash is becoming relevant again, he plays once again for his hometown in Kingsland. And the image we have here in the fifth panel is Cash playing for a crowd in his hometown. It was to dedicate a new post office in Kingsland. And the photo shows Cash on stage. Again, he's the man in black. He's wearing his black outfit. And once again, he's with his family. We see John Carter Cash, who looks a lot bigger than he did in 1976. Tommy Cash, Johnny's brother, who's also a country musician, and June Carter. So they get up on stage. Cash tells a few stories. He does a few of his classic songs. And, you know, it's almost like a tent revival. They're literally in a tent. The crowd is around him, and he's on stage doing his thing. And so Cash always had this way of connecting with his roots. And for him, it's another homecoming. And he was, you know, very genuine about how much he loved where he came from. So he was always very gracious to the crowd and saying how much he liked being back in Arkansas.
Arkansas's native son, Johnny Cash, was given a warm reception as he stepped onto the platform at Little Rock's War Memorial Stadium.
I've been told to say, "Hello, I'm Johnny Cash." "Hello, my kin folks. I'm glad to see you. What a wonderful thrill for me to be back in Arkansas. I think I'm kin to half the people here tonight, and I like Arkansas so much I'm going to claim kin to the other half."
And again, he could draw a bigger crowd than the whole number of people that lived in this town. So in this last panel, we talk about how Cash in his career is actually gaining momentum as his body is getting weaker and weaker.
In December 1996, Bill Clinton honored fellow Arkansan Johnny Cash at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C.
Well, as people will be entering the exhibit, they'll see a poster of Johnny Cash shaking hands with Bill Clinton. And I thought this was a really interesting photo because it really brings together two of the more famous Arkansans. Clinton talks about the heartland of America and Cash being one of those people who are the heart of America. And I think that really kind of sums up Cash, that he's someone who came from the middle of the country, literally, but he does really sort of represent a lot of the best things about what it means to be American. So it really is a good kind of way of summing up Cash's career.
Johnny Cash died on September 12, 2003. Arkansas and the rest of the nation mourned. The Arkansas Times wrote, "Arkansas ran deep in Johnny Cash."
It doesn't seem like Cash is going away. I mean, people just keep writing about him and painting pictures, and there's graphic novels that have been written about him. So he doesn't just inspire the musicians and the biographers. I also think he inspires the artists, too.
Let's hear again from Tom Richeson.
There seems to be a resurgence of Cash acolytes, and people are really into Johnny Cash right now. Any thoughts about why his music is kind of endured and is so enduring?
I'm not really sure. I do know this, though. I know that, for instance, he was great friends with the evangelist Billy Graham, and they were lifelong friends. And when Johnny died, his son went to Billy Graham and asked him, "What was it you saw in my father?" And I'm going to quote here. "My initial impression of your father was surprise. I didn't expect him to be that ordinary. I loved your father. He was one of the few men who I've really loved." And I just find that extraordinary, that people loved his music because they probably loved him, because he didn't put anybody off. Nothing he did was pretentious.
"I got a Christmas present from Billy Graham. Ruth and Billy Graham sent us a 10-pound box of popcorn. Now, that's a lot of popcorn, 10 pounds of popcorn. Three flavors, you know, in sections. And I had that popcorn opened in my office, and my brother came in. He said, 'Where'd all the popcorn come from?' And I said, 'Billy Graham sent it to me.' And he said, 'Oh, really? I got to have some of that.' And he got a double handful. And I watched him for a minute, and I started laughing. I said, 'You know, you can't get to heaven eating Billy Graham's popcorn.'"
Would you talk just a little about the educational outreach?
We're getting a group of school students on the first day of the exhibit on October 10th, and the students will be able to see Bill Nesbitt, who's a Little Rock musician. I don't know how much young kids know about Johnny Cash, but I think, you know, a lot of these things that he talked about in his music is universal. But I think, you know, it's an interesting story and what he went through.
Dr. Kristen Mann of the History Department and UALR student Stan James have been busy collecting materials to supplement the Johnny Cash Arkansas Icon exhibit that will be used as educational outreach for students in Arkansas. Kristen and Stan, welcome.
Hi.
Thank you for having us.
Kristen, would you tell us a bit about what you do as a history professor at UALR and in particular your educational outreach work?
I tend to work with teachers and students to provide educational materials and outreach and school field trips, other sorts of things for teachers and students.
Stan, how'd you get involved in the Johnny Cash Arkansas Icon exhibit?
Last semester, Dr. Mann offered me an internship at the UALR Center for Arkansas History and Culture. So I went up there and started working with Dr. Colin Woodward, which he's done an amazing job on this exhibit. He had me initially researching the concerts that Cash played in Arkansas after he was signed to Sun Records. So we did that all semester. And then this summer, I got hired to write curriculum.
So Stan was in my historian's craft methods class last fall, and we had just reinvigorated our undergraduate internship program in the department. And he is an aspiring teacher, and I thought that his combination of musical expertise and desire to be a teacher would be a perfect fit for this internship. And they liked him so well, they hired him again over the summer.
You designed a curricula that focuses on varied historical aspects surrounding Cash and his life, including material on riding the Cotton Belt, the Great Depression and its effect on the Dyess Colony, the resettlement of the colony after the flood in 1937, prison reform in Arkansas, and Native American civil rights. What are some of the key and primary questions you pose to students?
In regards to the Cotton Belt Railroad, you know, what was the significance of those railroads to Arkansas and to the United States? How did the Great Depression affect daily life in Arkansas? How do we handle hard times? And prison reform, you know, should we be concerned with how prisoners are treated?
One of the things that we've been trying to do with these local history projects is to find ways to engage students with local history through all kinds of different media, through art, through music, and to try to sneak social studies back into the curriculum wherever we can. So you can look at song lyrics as poetry, and you can study them in your English class, but you can also look at them in a social studies class and take a big question like, how do we handle hard times? Well, Johnny Cash experienced a lot of hard times in his life, and his response to those times is one thing that we can study, and music was one of those responses. But we can also look at other people in Arkansas and other people at other places and times, even people in the world today, and think about how they handle hard times as well. So we sort of saw Johnny Cash and his music as an entry point to a lot of other bigger issues that you might discuss in a wide variety of contexts with students.
And we're also putting together an online exhibit. So if you can't get to Little Rock and see the exhibit in the gallery, we're going to be putting photographs online with also the story of the exhibit and Johnny Cash's life. And so if you want to know more, if you do see the actual exhibit, if you do want to know more, there'll be something online for you to see.
So this exhibit will be a truly multimedia show. You'll have pictures, you'll have some art, you'll have artifacts, you'll have music.
Right. And Bill Nesbitt will be doing the daytime show for the school kids. And at night, we'll be having two bands. One, which is Jeff Coleman and the Feeders. They're a local band. Their drummer is a UALR student. And they'll be doing Cash songs.
Arrested, I was dressed in black. Put me on a train and they took me back. Had no friend for to get my bail. They slapped my dried up carcass in that county jail.
And they're really good. And also W.S. Holland Band. W.S. Holland is the only drummer that Johnny Cash ever had. And he still tours. And he does, in a lot of ways, a lot like what Nesbitt is going to do. He'll play, and then he'll talk a bit about Johnny Cash and about his history as a musician. But W.S. Holland was there at Sun
at the beginning too, and he was the house drummer. And so he was a professional before he joined Cash's band. But he's still around and he's still touring. I think he's 79 or 80 now. He's coming from Dallas and playing for us in Little Rock. So we'll have Jeff Coleman and the Feeders warming up for the W.S. Holland Band. And I think it's going to be, you know, a lot of music that day, so it should be really great.
And those music performances will be on October 10th. Broadcast from the University District, this has been a special program on KUAR 89.1. Thanks for joining us. Arts and Letters and other programming that airs on this station can be found at KUAR.org. Leave us a comment there and let us know what you've thought about the program. Thank you to Heather Smith and With Walker, and Jeff Coleman and Mark Chiaro, who supplied the music for the show. Thank you to Deborah Baldwin, Tom Clifton, Nick Sosnesky, Tom Richeson, Kristen Mann, and Stan James. On behalf of the College of Arts, Letters, and Sciences, a special thank you to ASI archivist Dr. Cullen Woodward, who served as our tour guide and contributed mightily to the writing of the show. Thank you to producer extraordinaire Mr. Chris Hickey. For Arts and Letters, I'm J. Bradley Minnick, hoping in the words of Johnny Cash, if you aren't going to say exactly how and what you feel, you might as well not say anything at all.